Welcome to MedShark Insider with Bill Fukui, your expert host on all things medical marketing and SEO.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of MedShark Insider. And today I've got a unique opportunity that I actually stumbled onto a little while ago through one of my former relationships I had in the dental industry, Mike Gergen. He turned me on to an organization called the Seattle Study Club, and consequently, I got introduced to this young man on the other side of the screen here, Greg Tice, who is the managing director of the Seattle Study Club. And we're going to talk really about kind of the collaborative spirit and the opportunities to share and engage with other colleagues and the strategies that they incorporate to really help elevate practices and the quality of life with a lot of their clients. So welcome, Greg.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
Well, do me a favor, because I'm not as detailed with your personal background. Kind of give me a little bit of background on where you came from and how you came to, you know, to the Seattle Study Club.
Okay. Well, we have to go back 26 years now.
Okay.
No worries. I started with Dr. Cohen, who's the founder of the Seattle Study Club Study Club in January 3rd of 1995. Prior to that, when I got out of university, I went into the event industry. My background was in political science, psychology, and education. But I ended up as an event producer.
Okay.
I was doing fundraising with the MS Society, Cystic Fibrosis. And after a few years of that, and being still young and naive, I knew it all. So I struck out on my own and started my own event production company, primarily doing mostly concerts. I worked with the likes of Reba McEntire and Willie Nelson, so country focused, but I was a concert promoter.
Right.
Then I had twins. And when you're promoting concerts, basically it's professional gambling, or it was at the time. I was either making money or losing money. And my wife encouraged me to find something a little more steady. So I applied. Michael was actually advertising. Dr. Cohen was actually advertising in the Seattle Times. People still read newspapers back then. And I applied he was looking for an event producer for their second symposium, for the second Seattle Study Club symposium. So I applied, went in for my first interview, felt like we hit it off really, really well. The rest of this I learned kind of years later, but apparently he wasn't going to hire me. Even though we had hit it off really well, he wasn't so comfortable. He was a dentist, a periodontist, and his team had always been female. The people who had worked for him had always been female. He wasn't sure how he'd get along with a male employee, mm-hmm. but he decided to take the leap, called me in. Sorry, this is a little bit of a long story, but
no, that's fine.
There's a semi punchline to it. He called me in for a second interview, and I went in December 28th for my second interview of 1994. And the second interview lasted maybe a minute. It was very quick pleasantries. How are your holidays? Blah. And he said, okay, Greg, here's the deal. And if you've ever met Michael, you know this is exactly how he speaks. He said, here's the deal. Your uncle was the keynote speaker at our symposium last year, which I had no idea about that connection, right? I mean, I know my uncle, I loved him, but I didn't know that he had done that. And Michael said, if Lou sends me a letter of recommendation today, you've got the job. Wow. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I don't even own a cell phone at this point, right? It's 1994. Can I use your phone? So I call Uncle Lou. Uncle Lou, you remember Michael Cohen? Oh, yeah, I remember. I said, can you send him a letter of recommendation for me? Of course. Give me the fax number. They're still faxing back
then. Gotcha. Believe me, I was there.
So he sent in the letter of recommendation, and I started January 3rd.
Yeah.
about, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years down the road, I'm sitting in Michael's office, in Dr. Cohen's office, and he says to me, "Did I ever show you the letter that Lou sent me?" And I said, "No, never saw it." So he went back into his file room, came back out a minute or so later. And, you know, the old fax paper was that kind of waxy.
Yeah.
And it's fading, but he hands it to me and I look at it and it's one sentence. And I can't say it verbatim. I will give you the gist of the sentence. It is, "Michael, if he screws up, I'll kill him. Lou." And this is my letter of recommendation.
Hey, that's great.
But only Lou would write that and only Michael would accept that as the letter of recommendation.
No, I mean, understand the relationship and the, you know, rapport that they have with one another. I don't think a lot of words was necessary.
No, not at all. So I'm a 28-year-old kid, basically, in January of 95, at my first real major conference in dentistry. Like, I had no dental background at all coming into this meeting. But I know my way around an event. So we're running this program. But I was hooked from day one. It was a week-long meeting, and I was hooked from the very first day because I am sitting down, not recognizing who they are at the moment, but I'm sitting down with Neil Starr, Mort Amsterdam, you know, D. Walter Cohen,
Michael Cohen's
there. I mean, greats in dentistry.
Yeah.
And they're calling me over to sit down and hang out with them and have a drink after, you know, the session's done in the evening and treating me like a human being.
Right.
Right. This kid, they don't know from Adam, but they know I'm working with Michael. And to listen to the conversations they had, the openness they had with one another, the, "I don't get this," or "this doesn't make sense to me," or "here's what I'm struggling with." That level of vulnerability from clinicians was addictive. I was instantly hooked. And 26 years later, they can't get rid of me now.
Oh, no, that's a great story. And I think you use the word vulnerability, which is a really powerful, you know, when you're talking about personal as well as practice growth, you got to acknowledge those types of things and be willing to, you know, acknowledge them if you have any chance to grow.
Absolutely. But you also have to have the environment for that to work.
Oh, that's true, right?
I can't walk into a room full of strangers and just start spilling my guts.
Right.
Unless I start to see them do it first. Mm-hmm. Right. If I'm new in a group or and they're already tight knit, there needs to be some way to engage me, to welcome me. And I need to feel like, okay, Bill, you're up there in this group, you're well respected, but you're throwing an issue or a problem out on the table, something you're struggling with. All of a sudden that makes it safer for me to do it.
Right.
Because if that guy can do it, I got it.
I'm good. In fact, it's almost, I wouldn't call it peer pressure, but you're almost feeling like you want to participate.
Yep.
You want to participate, you know, and it's not only just it just lowers the bar, in order for me to engage, you know, to share, you know, share things I wouldn't share with, you know, many of my other colleagues.
Yep.
You know, I think that's great. So give me an idea. You know, we're talking about this collaborative spirit, this willingness that I see as unique to somewhat in dentistry, because I also work with, you know, plastic surgeons, you know, med spas, you know, the cosmetic industry. And I don't see nearly as much of that, which is kind of surprising. I've got about 150,000 dentists across the country, but I only have maybe 8,000 board certified plastic surgeons. You would think with a smaller group, you'd have a lot more collaborative, you know, rapport with one another, because there's just, you know, it's a lot less competition, I think, in general. But I don't see that as much as I see in dentistry. So give me an idea. Give me a little background about, you know, the Seattle Study Club. Who makes up the Seattle Study Club? Who what makes for good, practices that participate and get value out of what you guys do?
Certainly. So if you're thinking about Seattle Study Club, the way I like to picture it is really as a network of educational pods all over the world. There are currently about 260 Seattle Study Club affiliates around the world, the vast majority of those in North America.
Okay.
But we have clubs in China, Japan, Australia, wow, Spain, Germany, Trinidad and Tobago of all places. So we're all over the place. But when you think about them, they're pods or educational communities where we are, through typically a singular director, a clinician running a study club.
Okay.
And many are specialists, but you don't have to be a specialist to run a study club. We also have many general practitioners running study clubs. But typically there is an individual we would refer to as the director of the club who will invite other clinicians in the community to participate in this, to use your words, collaborative environment, this environment where dentists are getting together to share information with one another because that's where the real learning takes place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, as well as I do, you know, there are a million lectures, and now that we're all over Zoom and web-based, you can go consume information anywhere you want, but that doesn't create real behavior change. It's a lot like watching television, right? If you've got a favorite TV show and you watched it last night or Sunday night or Saturday night, whatever it was, can you even remember what happened?
Yeah.
Not without prompting, not unless I sit there and discuss it with you, then you start to recall and it starts to come back. Lecture is the exact same way. Mm-hmm. Lecture-based education is cotton candy.
Yeah.
Great in the moment, doesn't last very long.
I got to remember that the next time I take kids over to the ball game or stuff. This is good. This is great now, but it ain't going to last.
That's right. It feels good in the moment, and we need those experiences.
Yeah.
But until we can sit down and discuss a case, discuss an issue, and start to look at how those ideas and concepts that we're picking up in the lectures, how they apply to our existing armamentarium, mm-hmm, we're not going to carry them back into our practice.
Okay.
So that's really the foundation of the club. So from a structural standpoint, the vast majority of participants in our study clubs are general practitioners.
Okay.
Every club has a smattering of specialists involved as well. Ortho, endo, oral surgery, perio, lab. A lab is a critical component when treatment planning.
Oh, absolutely.
And the foundation of each one of those clubs is a focus on comprehensive diagnosis and treatment planning.
Okay.
So when I look at us, we are an enabler in the positive sense of that word for these individuals to create a safe environment for clinicians to get together and decide what works for them. Really, our sole purpose is a focus on creating complete clinicians who are focused on comprehensive diagnosis and treatment planning.
Okay. Right.
With that as a foundation, we don't need to get involved in promoting a particular clinical religion. And I don't use that in the negative sense of the
word.
It's not
absolutely
this approach versus that approach. I don't care which one you use. In fact, let's put them both on the table so you can figure out which components are important to you.
Right. Right.
And that's, I think, long-term been the magic. The people that are attracted to a study club like this, because it's not sit and listen. It's not easy. You've got to work. You've got to engage. You've got to break into group discussion. The people that are attracted to this are the people who want to get better.
Right.
And that's a pretty amazing group to be able to work with. I mean, that's the joy I think most of us here find is the types of individuals we get to work with are going to be successful with or without us. We happen to be the tool they choose to use.
Right. Now, I think one of the things that when I first spoke with you to learn a little bit more about the study club was this, I guess the closest thing I could relate to that was in the business world, you have these CEO mentoring programs and you pay big bucks for those things. You can pay tens of thousands of dollars to be part of these CEO mentoring groups, Vistage or whatever they are. And we actually did engaged with that with our agency, with my previous agency. And our owner was mentoring with other, you know, non-industry competitive CEOs. And I mean, they drop trow. They share their books. They share their financials. They do everything. And you know, I think one of the things that I think this engagement back and forth, as opposed to just this one-way flow of information where it just kind of washes over with you, is there is an ongoing sense of accountability to the people that you're in the group with. There's part of that accountability, you know, which I found very unique. I thought that was really, really helpful in that situation. What's the relationship, you know, when you're getting these other group members in there? What's your relationship with one another, and you know, what type of communication do you have with other practices, et cetera? Kind of give me an idea of the day in the life of an average practice. Say I'm the group leader, and I've invited an endodontist or an ortho into the group. What should they expect?
Sure. So when you look at the study club itself, at the local level, the programming, the curriculum, that's how we refer to it, because mm-hmm. it's really designed to help individuals move predictably from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. The curriculum runs on an academic calendar. So all of our clubs run pretty much September through May or June, okay. with one program every month. So over the course of any given study club year, you're looking at 9 to 10 programs.
Okay.
On average, those sessions are roughly 4 to 5 weeks apart. Okay. So, and really what we're trying to do there is create the consistency of going back to school, right? This is just a regular, this is a group of friends was what we're moving towards that gets together on a regular basis to learn from each other. Mm-hmm. Of those 9 to 10 programs, 2 to 3 of them, and really 2 to 3 max, are full day lectures where we're bringing someone in from the outside to bring new information to the table. You know, and I know earlier I was banging on lectures a little bit, and I don't want to make it seem like they're irrelevant. It's important to have that new information coming to the table. But the balance of the programs are built around interaction. Doctors sharing information with each other, because that's where the real learning takes place. Mm-hmm. And we structure these sessions to, for lack of a better term, force the interaction and engagement, but in a safe environment. Mm-hmm. They might do a treatment planning session. They might do a problem solving workshop. We might set them up for an evening of clinical debate.
Okay.
Where we've got a Panky alum and an LVI alum going head to head clinical debate on occlusion. And, you know, they're passionate about
it. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it creates phenomenal dialogue.
Yes.
And it's that dialogue and my engagement with you through that dialogue that gets through our cognitive reticular. It gets through the filter system that, if it doesn't fit what I already know, I don't even hear it.
Right.
When I'm engaged in discussion with you, I give it more weight. I give it more consideration. And the more often I do that through repetition with people that I trust, and that's a critical component.
Right.
The more often I do that, the more likely I am to start to incorporate some of those things into my daily behavior.
Oh, you know, the idea of, stimulating thought processes beyond what your conventional wisdom or what you believe is conventional wisdom, and stimulate this idea of what ifs, or maybe I was wrong. You know, I don't think that, you know, let's face it. Most of the practitioners that are dealing, you know, in the study clubs, let's face it, every one of them, I mean, every dentist out there, they were always the smartest kid in class. Yep. You know, they always got good grades. They were, you know, really success driven. They wouldn't be where they were, you know, are today without that. So a lot of times, you know, we let our own egos or our own self-confidence sometimes kind of get in the way of personal as well as professional growth, and really even stimulating our, you know, our energies within in the practice. When you're talking about the passion that these guys have, whether they're talking about treatment plans, et cetera, I think that's a huge component of what you guys bring.
Well, when you think about it, it's not just dentists, it's human beings. We operate yeah. based on the truth mm-hmm. as we perceive it to be. Not the right. truth, the truth as we perceive it to be. And the only way to break through that is if I'm engaged with people that I trust,
yeah,
who have the courage to disagree with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Again, in a safe environment. I mean, I keep bringing it full circle, but when we're engaged in dialogue and discussion, you're going to open my eyes because you practice differently than I do. You behave differently than I do. Your experiences mm-hmm. are different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
And you're, because we have this faith and trust in one another, I may still disagree.
Uh-huh.
But you're, I'm going to recognize those things rather than just in one ear and out the other mm-hmm. because it doesn't fit my currently held mm-hmm. belief system.
Right. Well, I think with every perspective, there are nuances,
yep.
and that it is not black and white. And yes, I may disagree in theory or, you know, overall, generally speaking, I disagree with you on that. But there is this one point or this area that, you know what, I think there's some legitimacy to that. And then you can incorporate, not it doesn't have to be an all or nothing or a one size fits all kind of thing. I think you're going to be able to take away certain aspects that we're not here to change your opinion of everything, but it's there are going to be, like you're saying, there are going to be things that fit in my practice, fit in my you know, way of thinking that, you know, I can adopt that is new to me, even though we may disagree on, you know, philosophically on you know, 30,000 foot level, but in the details, the yep. you know, the devil is in the details. You know, we find that, you know, there are things that we may have overlooked or just assumed. I think that's probably a bigger, you know, problem is people, we just assume certain things.
Always. Well, and you made an interesting point in when you said, not one size fits all. And I think that's been a key component to the long-term success of these study clubs as well. When you think about the average life expectancy roughly of a study club in dentistry in the United States is about 18 months, maybe 2 years if you push it. The average life expectancy of a Seattle study club today is 14 years.
Wow.
So, and I believe because it's not one size fits all. Mm-hmm. Every club has what we call a bespoke curriculum, meaning if you're running a study club, we're sitting down with you and building a curriculum with you that fits the needs of the people in your community.
Right.
And that's going to be different from Seattle to Miami to New York mm-hmm. to, you know, Tullahoma, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And not one is better than the other. The structure remains the same for that curriculum.
Right.
But the content is customized to meet the needs locally there. And it's that level of customization that I think keeps people coming back. That mm-hmm. and the relationship. Right. You said it when we talked the other day, dentistry is an isolating industry. I mean, mm-hmm. it's truly isolating, yes. especially for the dentists.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you think about it, whether it's male or female as a dentist, they're running their own little fiefdom. Mm-hmm. And they have the members of the court, their team, but that's their world.
Yeah.
And the opportunity, again, I keep coming back to it, but in a safe environment to get together with other dukes and duchesses and kings
yeah.
and queens.
That's a great way of putting it.
It's huge.
Yeah. You know, some of the things that you were talking about in turn, you know, referred to a lot of the clinical philosophies and addressing a lot of that. One of the things that I noticed when I was on your website Was there also a slant on the business of medicine, the business of dentistry?
Yes.
You know, the business academy that you guys refer to. I think that's, you know, as much as the clinical part is what drives a lot of practices, you know, because that's what we do,
yes,
the clinical side. The business side isn't always the stuff that the practitioners really like to deal with. Even
sure,
though they recognize, you know, let's face it, in my own, you know, kingdom or fiefdom, I'm also the business manager. I'm the marketing director. I'm the, you know, I ultimately make those decisions that affect the profitability, the quality of life,
yep,
the environment in my practice. Where does the business academy and the business side of, you know, practice management, practice development come when they're dealing with colleagues in the study club?
Yeah, sure. So there are really two components here. There's within the study club itself, and then there's the business academy as well.
Okay.
So let's stay for the moment inside the study club. Every club every year will have one or two programs that touches on topics outside of but related to dentistry.
Okay.
Meaning health and well-being, financial management, practice management, personal and professional development. Mm-hmm. Those are all critical components. And within the study club environment itself, if we're not helping the dentists that are in the club grow personally, professionally, and clinically, we're not doing our job.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes helping their team members be educated and grow, right? Part of that philosophy, mm-hmm, is the clinician can get as good as they want to be clinically, but if their team members aren't being educated, if they're not growing and moving forward, the practice isn't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a critical component of that as well. So we will help them build in those pieces. Then you lump on top of that the business aspect of dentistry itself. And most dentists, and I don't want to overstate this, but many dentists run a practice, not a business.
Yeah.
And through no one's fault, right? There was just no training, no structure around that. Mm-hmm. When we recognized the need for that, was actually back in 2006, Dr. Cohen decided he was going to focus an entire symposium on the business of dentistry. We would go for a week without showing a single tooth on screen for our big national meeting. And it was a major risk, right? I mean, a,
yeah,
down meeting with no teeth is a frightening prospect from,
yeah,
a business standpoint. Will people even show up?
Yes.
And the feedback we got was phenomenal. So we started to work on that and incorporate it into the local clubs. And about 2 years ago, we launched the Business Academy. And the,
uh-huh,
idea behind the Business Academy is it's not practice management.
Right.
And it's not dental management. It is literally learning from people outside of the world of dentistry the basic business principles that we all need to have. Leadership, branding, understanding your P&L. What are the,
yeah,
ratios that I should have in my P&L?
Mm-hmm.
How am I defining profit in my practice?
Right.
Right. What's a fixed cost? What's a variable cost? And how am I defining those?
Mm-hmm.
Without even that as a foundation, I'm not really ever going to run a business.
No. Right.
So we developed this business academy, using people we knew as well as we were referred to, again, outside of the world of dentistry,
mm-hmm,
to bring these concepts into the world of dentistry for us. So we're not reliant on just practice management, people who have a certain,
right,
belief system. This is how you build your hygiene schedule. We're not playing there.
Right.
We're playing on the physical business side of the practice.
Mm-hmm. You know, probably the, when you're talking about having certain, you know, time allotted for the business side and dealing with the business side, I have a feeling over the last year, obviously, with restrictions and COVID and all this other stuff, that's probably maybe played a bigger role in some of the engagements with practices that are, you know, when you're talking about struggles or what do we do, there is a sense of, I don't know if it's a sense of panic, but yeah, I mean, let's face it, it's highly stressful. What do you see? I just see the value of, I can't even imagine being a solo practitioner in a practice where I don't have this network of people to, you know, in the midst of what we have today. Yeah. If you had to go through that completely alone, I get the feeling you would have made bad decisions. You would have done some stupid things simply because you're doing them out of stress and panic.
Yes.
As opposed to the collaborative, hey, let's talk about this. What is everybody seeing? What is everybody doing? You know, what are ideas that we have? I think after we got off the phone earlier, I was just like going, wow, if I was a practice, and not that this is, you know, once COVID's over with, or maybe it's behind us to a large degree, that doesn't mean other crises aren't going to keep happening. Just yep. Assume that this is almost the course of life. These yeah. challenges will happen, whether it's this or politics or, you know, the OSHA or whatever it is.
Yeah.
There's always things happening, you know, HIPAA, whatever it is, it's going to keep impacting us, you know, as an industry. And to do that in isolation is it's a scary proposition. You're right. It's isolating.
That's part of the beauty of a network like this as well. And it doesn't have to be Seattle Study Club, but that's yeah. part of the beauty of a network like this. Mm-hmm. In going through something like the pandemic, we didn't have all the answers. Mm-hmm. We drew on the experiences and experiments of people within the network. How are you dealing with PPE? What are you doing to set your practice up for success? How are you managing patient flow? What are you doing with this? And nobody was the expert. People were trying things. Some things were working, some things weren't. But because we could get together as a group and share them, whether it's nationally or internationally, or even at the local level, just
yeah.
with local Zoom meetings, and draw on those experiences and what other people were doing, that's the full advantage of having a network of like-minded individuals. Not everybody thinks the same, but people are looking to grow and get better, and they're mm-hmm. willing to open up and share with one another.
Right.
So we did, when the pandemic first started, we started what we call virtual classroom.
Okay.
So we brought in some speakers from outside to do some sessions, but we also brought in people from within the network to share how you're handling PPE. We did a session on, okay, your staff is scared.
Yeah.
Right? We're in April. Your staff is scared.
Yeah.
What do you do? How do you manage this?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really powerful dialogue.
Yeah.
So drawing on those components of the network, I think really helped a lot of people thrive through this pandemic.
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing too is we see camaraderie build in the midst of adversity.
Yes.
We have a common cause now. And the common enemy is not each other, you know. You know, unfortunately we live in an environment that is, let's face it, it's competitive. We live yeah. in a competitive society. It is about, you know, success driven people and businesses, and it is competitive. But I think in the midst of, you know, of adversity and stuff, I think the relationships that you form in these groups and these types of, you know, organizations that help facilitate this trusting kind of thing, I can't see that as not being, you know, that group not being there's more adhesives there now than before. I mean, really, yes. How could it not?
Oh, absolutely. And we've seen that, and we get that feedback from the membership in the network as well. So as we communicate with them and they're replying, whether it's the emails or on these Zoom calls or whatever it is, the feedback we're getting is the contact has actually increased. The frequency of contact has increased.
Yes.
The quality of that contact isn't the same. Mm-hmm. But the frequency of contact has increased and it has been appreciated, whether it's WhatsApp group, WhatsApp discussion groups, or, you know, Zoom happy hours or whatever it is.
Right.
Just that release has been important.
Yeah, I think that's and again, I'm going to go back to when we first started this conversation. Most of the industries I've worked in outside of dentistry, they really don't have this, but I think this concept can translate
for sure
to, you know, you don't have to be a dentist or in dentistry to benefit from, you know, from this type of, you know, collaboration.
Oh, absolutely. Really. When I think about it, so my wife is a massage therapist, and when I think about the classes she takes them with a group of other therapists. Mm-hmm. That do this together. Right. In essence, that's what that is. It's a familial group learning together. And she'll tell me invariably, and I don't have to prompt it, she'll say, the class was good. I learned more at the dinner afterwards.
Yeah.
when we did that together.
Yes.
Than the class itself.
Yeah.
And that, I think, you know, Brooks, no industry. There's no issue there. I don't care if you're a hairdresser, a med spa, a plastic surgeon, a car dealership.
Uh-huh.
The ability to sit down and commiserate, but in a positive and negative way, but
right.
to share with one another experiences, challenges, opportunities. Really opens us up. It gets us out of those blinders, right? We mm-hmm. have this monofocus typically, as right. again, as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to take those blinders off because you're forcing me to.
Yeah.
is a huge advantage, but that's got to be scheduled, right? Yeah. It rarely happens randomly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it goes back to, this was one of the, programs Dr. Cohen actually gave several years ago. It goes back to the old coffee houses in England when like industries would get together in their own coffee houses. The miners would get together and the uh-huh. bankers would get together over coffee at the end of the day and talk yeah. with each other. That doesn't happen anymore. We need yeah. to.
I think the you know, I'll, on a personal level, you know, we just finished the holidays. And I think back before the internet, before we had all these other pseudo ways of communicating with everybody. When I was, you know, and again, I'm dating myself, you know, back in the late 60s, I would be getting into the car. My dad, we lived on a farm. We'd put together these fruit baskets, and you didn't send things through Amazon as a gift. You physically drove to their house and hand delivered them, you know, a fruit basket or whatever it is. And these were all family friends. And those days don't happen any, you know, those things don't happen today in general. I still hand deliver gifts to a handful of friends. I don't mail them. I don't send them through Amazon. It is physically, I hand make their gift. I put it all together because I know who they are, their personalities, what they like. I put those things together and I hand deliver them because those relationships are so valuable. And I continue to both mutually get benefit from them. And I think that, want that personal communication, that relationship, I think that is what's missing many times that we take for granted.
Oh, yeah. Well, and when you think about it today, bringing it back to where you started with this, you know, Amazon and the age of the internet and Zoom and all of that, the digital communication tools and web-based programming that we have available today is great for creating information consumption. Mm-hmm. But if you want critical thinking, creativity, behavior change, real learning, that requires in-person, face-to-face interaction and engagement. Mm-hmm. They're very different components. And there are places for both,
right,
but they're very different components.
Yeah, I would agree. Hey, you know, Greg, I want to thank you for all your time today. You've been more than generous with your time and insights. I see you as one of you and this organization as one of the really the, you know, pillars of where it's going to take us to the next level as an industry. And I think the quality of life of the dentists can be completely enhanced as long as they're willing to embrace some of the concepts that you're promoting. So do me a favor. What would be the best way that if somebody is interested in doing study clubs, and I would even throw out people even outside of dentistry that have a, you know, an interest in possibly doing something like this within their own industry. How can they get a hold of you or get some more information from you?
Sure. So they can contact me directly and they can call my direct line, which is 425-448-9005. They can reach me through Instagram. And that tag is on screen here along with my phone number and my email address as well. So you can reach out to me any way you choose. If you're interested in joining a club, we'll connect you with a club in your area. Mm-hmm. If you're interested in learning more about how to take this concept into your industry, please reach out. I'd love to have that conversation. So
that sounds great. I appreciate all your openness, Greg. Thank you again for all your time today. And we should do this again. I think we can, there's so many topics that we can address in this. That, you know, this is more of just kind of the 30,000 foot view. I'd like to maybe have another conversation with you where we can kind of maybe peel back the onion a little bit and maybe, you know, get under the hood and really see some of the value that the practices are getting out of this.
Be happy to do it anytime.
Super. Hey, thanks again, Greg. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for the MedShark Insider with Bill Fukui. Join us next week for another dive into all things medical marketing. All episodes can be streamed at www.medsharkdigital.com/medshark-insider.